I'm here to talk to you about Juju, which is Canonical's configuration management service-oriented architecture. We call it service orchestration product. And an important thing to keep in mind when we move forward is that we're not just talking about configuration management, that we set a layer above. So a little bit before we get started is that I do have a background in marketing, so this is the obligatory buzzword slide. I'm going to say a lot of things, you know, about scale and DevOps, and we're going to talk a little bit about magic. And the interesting part about this is that magic is the only word that is reasonable on this slide. Because as we get into talking more and more about what we're doing and the community that we're building behind it, the buzzwords tend to go away when you really talk about people's problems. You know, somebody doesn't come to you and say, hey, so I've got this website, you know, and because my blog now needs to scale. You know, that person's blog needs to be optimized. So it depends on the situation, but that's my generic assessment of that slide. So really, Juju is a cloud automation tool from Canonical. It allows you to configure, manage, and scale services in a cloud environment. Now, whether that cloud is in the public cloud, whether it's on HP, AWS, whether you're trying to build your own data center using Ubuntu Mass, you can now orchestrate with physical hardware as well. It also supports Linux containers, which is obviously the hot-button solution these days with the future of automation. So a lot of you are going to look at me and say, okay, Chuck, but I already have these amenities available to me with my tool in Chef or Puppet or SaltStack or Ansible. And I'm not going to challenge you on that because you're right. You do have some of that available to you. But the thing is that you're doing configuration management, which is the first step to orchestration. But we'll get into that a little bit more in just a minute. So I listened to a keynote given by Jamie Winsor, who works for Riot Games, and they're the people behind League of Legends. And he made this amazing statement that really resonated with me. He looked at the audience and he said, guys, nobody is playing Nginx. They're not playing MySQL. They're playing League of Legends. And that to me spoke volumes, because at the end of the day, what was he talking about? He was talking about nobody is playing with the services that amalgamate to what I'm providing. So his service needed to take the front runner in what he's doing. He didn't care about the machines. He didn't care about any of the other bureaucrat stuff that goes with it. He cared about League of Legends and making sure that his players were getting an awesome and amazing experience. So when we get into that, we're starting to look at the problem that Canonical is approaching and saying, well, how are we trying to solve this? Like, what exactly is it that your tool is giving me? When you talk about service-oriented architecture, you're talking about services being the first-class citizen in your deployments. And you can now abstract away the thought of, well, how many machines make that up? Because it could be anywhere from 1 to N. You don't know. And it puts that service as being the front runner. So how many of you here have tried to deploy a big data solution like Hadoop? Okay. Hadoop is really interesting in the fact that it's got about 180 million configuration options. It can be deployed about 2 million different ways, and everybody has their own specific requirements in it. But really, to get started with Hadoop, you can distill a lot of that away, make it super simple and approachable. So whether or not we like it, the big data story is here. We're starting to talk about it. We're analyzing different things such as census data. I had a really interesting talk over lunch about beef analytics, of all things, where somebody's approaching a problem with calculating hanging weight and trying to get profit margins out of that. And the interesting thing with Hadoop is that you can spend a small fortune and just trying to get started with it, whether you're talking to experts or whether you're trying to get going on your own. So wouldn't you rather spend that time and money that you're going to spend reading the book and getting started with Hadoop? Now, mind you, I'm not saying don't read the book. I think everybody should read the book once. But we're trying to distill away the process and requirement of having that knowledge up front to get started. So as an extreme case example, we're going to take a look at a slide with a ton of different services. Now, you'll notice a lot of databases. You're going to notice some storm workers, a couple different Hadoops deployed there. I've got a Hive server in MySQL. And this gets really messy quick whenever you get started and you're trying to deploy all these services manually and figure out how they connect together and trying to just grok how this system itself would work. So now that you've looked at that and you've said, okay, I just got bombarded with a bunch of databases and a service. Now, what exactly is Juju doing to prevent that from being a problem? So service orchestration is the ability to deploy and focus on workloads. We want our users to be domain experts in what they're attempting to do with the software, not be domain experts in how to deploy that software. Now, it'll help whenever you go to troubleshoot it, but the idea is to abstract a lot of that away. So We also want to manage service life cycles. So as a service gets started and we start with just the standalone, and now we have a need to scale, we need to attach it to a different database server. We can't run all this on one machine. You know, how do we solve that problem? And suddenly we need to implement queuing because our users are using too much. And their needs have now changed. So the idea is that Juju is an event-driven system. And it allows you, as a configuration management expert, to react on those. And as your service evolves and changes, the service itself will reconfigure to adapt to the new environment. And also in the classic example of scale, it allows you to scale up and down seamlessly. So the key to all of this is relationships and the fact that you're telling how one service will talk to another service. So instead of spending the night staying up, reading blog posts, trying to figure out how to scale Hadoop and get it to talk to Hive and get Hive to talk to MySQL and introduce Elasticsearch to all that so you've got full text search, we now give you some very simple commands. You just juju deploy, which is absolutely completely reasonable. And then to scale, you say juju add unit. And what it's going to do is it's going to add a couple units to your deployment. And then you connect that by saying add a relationship between your Hadoop master and your slave clusters. It's pretty straightforward. And what we've done here is we've basically replaced a 14-page documentation of setup into about 5 commands. So a lot of people have actually adapted this to say that it's like apt-get for the cloud, and you're right. You're not wrong in that assumption at all. We're taking the domain-specific expertise and getting all of these deployed and set up and how to get this environment ready to rock, and we're making it easy for anybody. We're addressing the problem of approachability, how somebody can actually get involved with Juju and get involved with configuration management and move into service-oriented architecture. So unless machines are important to you in your deployment, we abstract all that away. And we call this the DevOps solution. The idea is that we started with bare metal. Some dude in the 70s was hanging out in a server room, you know, working with the machines, and you'd have to call him whenever stuff went down. Getting new machines was difficult. Getting everything set up was difficult. So the next step was virtualization, and that kind of changed the game. And as we looked at virtualization as an option, and we got moving, everybody loved it, we started talking about this fancy thing called the cloud, which we've talked about a little bit today. And from there, we stepped into configuration management so we can start automating that cloud. Well, the next step is obviously service orchestration, because we've already adopted the principles of SOA. Now we need to implement them and make it reusable and easy for everyone to approach. So the base unit in the Juju ecosystem is called charms. And a little abstract, but charms are the name for Juju deploy units. This is essentially how you're going to encapsulate your service, and you're going to tell it how to interact with other services. The basics behind charms is not to get you to learn something else, because you already have domain experience in another configuration management tool, whether that's Chef, Puppet, Shell Scripts, Python. We've even had somebody submit binaries in Go to automate a deployment. It was wholly fast, but we obviously didn't take that for the charm store, because, hey, how are you as an end user going to debug this whenever something goes awry? So appreciate the fact that it's really fast and they submitted it. So since we sit a layer above, we love all these configuration management tools. They give you item potency out of the box. They're extremely approachable if you're of a developer mindset. Now, for some of the older sysadmins, we also allow you to use Bash. It's brilliant. So you can build with our charms. We have a charm store, which is an open source collection. Everything that gets introduced into the Juju charm store must support an OSI-supported license. And tons of services have already been written for users to use, such as MongoDB, MySQL, Hadoop. And they're free to use for you to go and scale along with your application. So if you just go to jujucharms.com, you'll actually be looking at the store. That's it's a faux deployment of the Juju GUI, and allow you to drag services onto the canvas and connect them and see how things get started without actually paying for a cloud bill. And the next step to this is that if we don't provide something that you need, you're free to write your own charm. And you don't have to contribute that back. You can keep that walled away in your company's private repository. Or if you feel intrepid, you can submit it through the charm review process. And another charmer will take a look at your code, and we do some linting on it and validate that you're not running services as root. And you go through a peer review process to make sure that everything, it's good to meet other people's needs, and then we'll accept it into the charm store so that other people can get started using your service quickly. And there are definitely tools to get you started with this process. We have testing tools. We have We have this concept called bundles, to where if your service depends on another, you can distribute that right away. So that way it's following best practices for how to get started with your software suite. And the big thing to talk about here is how it works, the fact that Juju is an event-driven system. So charms encapsulate what's called hooks. You have a basic state. You've got an install state. You've got a configuration change state. You've got a started and a stop state. And you've also got a relationship joined, changed, departed, and broken. So between these hooks, as your charm receives an event, it's going to react accordingly via data that's being sent over the wire based on the event. And hooks do whatever needs to happen at that time. And all of this is managed through a Juju state server. So all of the messages go through the Juju state server, it sends it out to the machines, and they react on it accordingly. But the biggest win behind Juju itself is the community of expertise. You're not just adopting a tool. You're not adopting some plan that I had. You're actually adopting the domain expertise of everybody that uses Juju, contributes back to it. And the fact that it's all open source, it allows you to really look at what's going on inside the deployment model itself. You can use as little or as much of Juju as you need. So if you start with Juju and you decide, you know, I just need a couple services out of this, that's fine. And then you can relate your services to it manually. You can also use whatever language you want to get started in, which I've already covered. It's extremely easy to share. We'll take a look at a charm in a little bit to see just how lightweight they are or how heavy they can be. And chances are that if you're practicing configuration management, you're already 90% of the way there to adopting our model. So if your project runs on the cloud, you should definitely come talk to me. Join us in Pound Juju on irc.freenode.net. Or you can look for me on Twitter if you absolutely need to reach me. My handle is LazyPower. And without any further ado, let's go ahead and take a look at Juju and get started running some deployments. We'll see if the demo deities are feeling nice to me today. All right. So how many of you work with OpenStack? Anybody? All right, and you guys have seen the interesting deployment structures with OpenStack, right? Because there's about 500 different ways to deploy OpenStack as well, and with those different configurations. So what I've got here is Juju GUI, and I'm connected to two different environments. I created one in AWS, and I've got another that's specific to Usenix. And I'm going to deploy a Hadoop cluster in the other. This is going to be a very basic Hadoop cluster. And while we wait for this to go, what you just saw was I dropped what's called a bundle. And bundles are YAML representations of your deployment. So as you can see through looking at this YAML file, it's very straightforward, no frills. We have an identifier for what the bundle itself is. I've called it cluster, nice and descriptive, right? And we define the services in array notation. So we've got a couple different units of a Hadoop cluster. We tell it where the charm resource is. This is actually coming from the charm store. We tell it the series that we want to deploy, and we also limit it to a revision of Hadoop 10. So if active upgrades are going against Hadoop and it's increased to version 14, we know that this particular deployment works out of the box as is, so that way you get a fresh start, and it's up to you if you want to upgrade your service or not. I would recommend that you deploy two environments, a staging and a production, and evaluate everything, so quality gate your work. And then down here, we also define the relationships between the service, which is another YAML array notation. It's pretty straightforward. Looking at all this, I'm firmly confident that anybody in this room could write a bundle. And the brilliant part about this is that you don't even have to write it yourself by hand. Looking at the GUI, we've got this export button, and what it'll do is it'll take your deployment topology, it dumps it out into the YAML file for you, and we can open it. We see that we've got our bundle. So it's extremely quick and easy for you to share your deployment maps with other people, whether you're going from a concept as a developer using LXC containers to your cloud provider, or whether you want to share this with another business partner that's running overseas, so that way they can deploy it to their own cloud provider. And so taking a step down from bundles, because bundles are an amalgamation of all the services that you're working with that comprise your environment, let's take a look at the charm. I myself am the maintainer of the Rails charm, and this is one of our heavier charms because it leans on Chef Solo. So if I run tree, I see that I've got a big directory here of, there's a config YAML, which defines all the different variables that it can receive. We drop into cookbooks, and you can see here that I've consumed a few different cookbooks in making up this service. And this is specific to how it talks to other services as well. The copyright file, which, as I noted, has to be an OSI-approved license, and then the hooks directory, which is probably the most interesting out of all of them, because this is responsible for handling all the event actions that come up in the queue. There's also a metadata, which we read into the store, and an enforced README policy to where you discuss basic configuration, scaling, description of your service, and where to go if you need to get support. Another thing is that we also have tests. So the compelling story about that is that if you release a charm and you want to get it into Trusty, we mandate that you have to, at bare minimum, unit test your hooks so that way you know that you're getting repeatable results. The next step to that, if you want to get a high quality rating, would be to write what's called an amulet test, which allows us to deploy your service in a bundle format and exercise different aspects of the service, such as if you're deploying a website, we're going to run a ping check against it. Or if you integrate with a database, we're going to ask that, and you have a login system, we're actually going to drive that login system to validate that it works. So that way, anybody that uses your service will have the confidence of knowing that using Juju that you're getting exactly what you expect. So without further ado, let's take a look at the metadata and see just how we define a charm. The first aspect of this is we want to give it a name. So name this rack because it's a little bit more descriptive of what it's doing. We're not actually just deploying Rails. We've got support for Sinatra. We've got support for Puma or any of the other services in the middle. So this is really a rack charm. And the idea behind this is that it's a minimal, moddable, modular, adaptable interface for anything that's going to be running on the Ruby on Rails stack. So we provide a few different things here. We provide an HTTP interface, which is down here under the provide statement. This is where we're talking about relationships. So you've got three states here. You can provide a relationship, you can require a relationship, or you have what's called a peering relationship. And peering relationships are interesting in the fact that they directly relate to how you scale. So as you deploy with one service and then you add another to it, there may be certain configuration that needs to happen between the two, such as sending a sending a secret key for your cookie generation or something similar to that. And to step down into each one of these, you just define the name of the interface, and then you define the actual interface. Now, these are loosely coupled. We don't take an RFC and make you adhere to that. What we want to do is we want to try to make these as generic enough and approachable enough that anybody can use them. And then as you move between different charms and you notice that this is, you know, going to provide HTTP as well, you can expect that there's always going to be an IP address and a port. So pretty straightforward, right, so far? And let's look at our configuration. We have a couple different variables that we can define, and we just specify the different variables that we want to allow for configuration. And the idea behind this is that we want opinionated deployments. For example, if I were to show you our WordPress charm, we have one option that states deployment configured, or I'm sorry, base, optimized, fast. So the idea behind that is optimized is highly optimized for security. And you go through it and you look and you see that it's served only over HTTPS. And some of the other options are turned off for PHP. If you look at fast, out of the box configured to be hyper fast because it runs on top of Memcached and it uses integrated caching plugins by default. It's a pretty interesting charm. So not a whole lot to talk about here other than the fact that we're just going to define different things that we want to be able to look at. And it's also interesting to note that these do show up in the GUI. So I'll inspect one here. Let's take a look at Hive. And in our inspector, everything that you define in that config YAML is also approachable by the GUI. So the interesting thing about Juju as well is that while you do have the opportunity to script it via the command line and interact with it only via the command line, it also ships with a GUI charm that you can deploy to your Bootstrap node and get a web interface that I like to call manager mode because managers love to see their deployments represented in a map. So the great part about this is that the connections that you see between the charms, as the services come online, you'll start to see that. And I'm sorry for the low resolution, but that doesn't necessarily represent network topology. This could also be running as easily on the same host in an LXC container, and the relationship between the two just means a cross-container relationship. So when we look at the install hook, we see that it's doing some very, very voodoo here, right? It's bash, and we're calling the script called Bootstrap. Then what's that do? Looking at Bootstrap, this is responsible for nothing more than installing Chef Solo. It's pretty straightforward. It's running RVM so that we make sure that we've got an opportunity to change out our Ruby versions as we need it. We also fetch the, we also run solo.rb from our cookbook path. And what's brilliant about all this is that we're just wrapping a chef cookbook. It's provided another way to run it instead of executing through Knife. So when we look in our cookbooks, another thing to note, so we look at all these are all linked to stub. And stub is nothing more than a bit of bash to execute our chef cookbooks. So if you look at it, it's going to read the hook name out of the calling context, and then it's going to execute the proper hook and or the proper recipe in the cookbook. Oh my, what am I doing? Looking at hooks, where are my cookbooks? I forgot how my charm is put together. All right, so now that we're looking at cookbooks, all these different cookbooks are related. I mean, if you guys want me to go through, I can also go through the chef bits. We can also take a look at another charm. Shows a little bit of the chef, okay. So let's take a look at this. Let's go to the Nginx cookbook, and let's take a look at the recipes. And what we're gonna see here is a default recipe that we execute when the relationship commands. And what we're doing is we're just telling Nginx to install, and we're setting the a template, and we're populating a couple different variables on who owns that in the group. It's pretty straightforward. It's literally just blibbits. Whenever you take a look at the rack cookbook itself, it's gonna be a little bit more interesting. Take a look at our installation routine. We install the username deploy, and deploy is who's responsible for making sure that our apps are deployed proper. He's a non-root user. Step down into creating all the different directories in kind of a Capistrano style for our deployment so that we can do version management deployments. We also include the deploy recipe itself, which gets built dynamically when you're running the charm itself. So as you populate different variables, this file is generated on the fly and is responsible for your app grooming. It also starts the Nginx service and it opens up port 80. That's all that's required during installation. Now whenever we go through our config changed, this is when deployment's gonna happen. And when we look at this, we check the revision. We wanna override any environment variables that we're gonna get that are required to run our service. We're going to tell Upstart to run our Upstart scripts as if you were using, what's his name? I apologize, I can't come up with it off the top of my head because I've been using this for so long at this point. Foreman is what I was looking for. Foreman will build Upstart scripts for you. It's akin to that, but you're providing the Upstart script within this charm itself. So looking at that, from config change, the final bit would just be the start. And the start RB is just making sure that our Nginx and our Rails servers are restarted. So a lot of this is very, very lightweight, but it's all being piped through Chef Solo, so it's extremely fast. And there's not really a whole lot for me to say to it other than that. It's just really interesting the fact that it's a framework charm and it's got a few different configuration options. So you as a Rails developer, if you wanted to integrate your Rails app with a MySQL database, you just have to expect that you're going to receive that configuration at runtime. You're not going to get that defined in your database.yaml. That's going to be written for you by the charm before it kicks off your service. So you don't even need to worry about the credentials at that point. This is all going to be provided for you as well as your database provisioning because this happens during the relationship exchange. At this, let's take a check on our deployment. And it looks like our Hadoop stack has come online. So from start to finish, it'll take about 8 minutes for your Hadoop stack to get started. And the interesting part to this is that by default, we start it secure because only the ports that we need to open are open. And I believe 5002 is the management port. Oh man, demo deities are not being nice to me today. And I just closed that. Okay, so while I'm waiting for that one to come back open for me, let's take a look at our OpenStack installation. And OpenStack installed, it's a 10-node cluster that we look at here. We've got all the different services defined to comprise a very basic OpenStack installation with our compute nodes, our image server, as well as the other services that comprise that, such as our dashboard. So looking at the dashboard, we'll open this up, hit port 80. I believe the URL is /horizon. It's giving me the internal because I clicked on the wrong one. Let's click on this guy. /horizon. And we see our login screen. So I have configured this side of the box to come with my password. And we are logged in. So since we're taking this and trying to bring this to a more approachable environment, we've noticed that we've got a very small market share buy-in right now for people that are actually using configuration management. And what we want to do is we want to kind of reduce those barriers to entry. Well, we're not saying that some of the different configuration management tools, the learning curve is too high. We've just not seen high adoption. So one of the things that we're addressing is just how easy it is to get started by not enforcing a particular language to be used, or that you have to follow not that you don't have to follow a specific pattern, because we are using service-oriented architecture, and that itself comes with different patterns, but we want anybody to be able to contribute. It's kind of a personal anecdote. Whenever the Ubuntu One file system was shut down, a lot of our users were left in a panic. They were stating, hey, wait, why is this happening? Where do we go? What do we do now? One of the things that I took upon myself was to address the community and say, hey, we've got your back. The Juju team itself put together the own cloud distribution using a community member's code, and it was brilliant. It took about 2 weeks for us to get everything together and put together the tutorial. And I've stepped 15 users through in how to get this started, integrate it with their Android phones. And we now have 15 community users out in the wild that are using Juju for their personal file management system. So that way it can scale as they need it to. They can run backups using DigitalOcean. And all of this is a low-cost solution for them. So we literally took it to where you would have to have an expertise in deploying and running your own cloud services and put it in the hands of anybody that wanted to get started with it. So it started the conversation for them. And we're looking at doing this too with different services. I'm starting to work with Clearwater on doing DNS deployments using Juju and deploying a lot of their SIP-based tooling. There's a lot of opportunity in here for people to get started with our service. So I think this is a good point for me to start Q&A. So if anybody has any questions, feel free.
Without starting a holy war, I'm a Red Hat fanboy.
Okay.
It looks, at first blush, like this would be totally cool. You know, you'd have installation issues possibly, but other than that, it looks to be pretty much technology or distro agnostic. Is that the case? Could I run Juju on?
We've got work right now bringing it to CentOS. A community member is working on that. The only requirement to get started is a pseudo-less or a passwordless pseudo user and cloud init. Awesome. So I do believe that CentOS has cloud init now.
Yes.
And so the work is being started there. As far as your charm itself, you need to make sure that you're supporting RPM right. packages and whatnot. But there's nothing preventing it. We've actually got work right now from a third-party vendor bringing it to Windows as well, so you can automate your entire stack, okay. Whether that's deploying Active Directory or whether that's deploying Bind. You know, just to use an example. So,
very cool. Cool.
Similar question, but with respect to the configuration management tools you use.
Sure.
So you have Chef. You mentioned Puppet, Ansible. How about how easy it is to add others? I don't know. CF Engine.
Oh well, relating to your configuration management tool. It's easy for anyone to get started with that. So if you're using, I don't know much about CF Engine, I'll be upfront about that. But as long as you can isolate your change management into individual hooks following our pattern, such as we wrote the Chef, as I started to step through the Chef cookbook, everything was implemented in hooks. So as long as the logic that you need to execute can be encapsulated in that bit, you're good to go. In order for you to start, you just need to be able to call a binary or a script from the file system. So you can start by writing bash scripts and then executing your CF Engine scripts, kicking off from that bash script.
Okay.
Just try to follow the pattern as best you can. And if you have any questions, feel free to join and I'll be happy to help.
All right. Thanks.
No problem. So I hope I didn't bore anybody to death because I tell you, I am pretty full too. I find it a little hard to make it through my talk. While we wait for another question, I'm gonna tell a bit of a joke. Are there any Mitch Hedberg fans in the audience? The second floor really cracked me up because you know, escalators, they don't ever break down. They just turn into stairs. Sorry for the convenience. So I saw that and that gave me a bit of a grin. I also want to stress the fact that since we're doing service orchestration, we're not here to replace any of your existing tools. We actually want to integrate and wrap those because what you guys are working on and what you're providing and producing is excellent quality. We actually recommend that our community members write their deployable service units in configuration management frameworks. But we don't want to superimpose that as a limitation to get started because you can write idempotent bash scripts. We had a presentation about a guy that started a service based off of that and moved to do Python. So moving a little bit forward with that, a fun fact is that Juju was also one of the largest open source Go code bases. I believe that we're ranked at number one. So if anybody knows Go, you want to get started looking at the source code, it's available on GitHub at github.com/Juju. And if you have any questions about Juju, we're always available on IRC and irc.freenode.net and pound Juju. Bring my slides back up. And you can also start looking at our charms. We do accept pull requests and contributions. Please file bugs if you find them. And I think from that, we already did the live demo. I believe my Hadoop stack was giving me an issue. Oh, you're so angry. Don't do that to me. Let's see here. Let's do Juju status. Oh, because I'm on local. No wonder why. Usenix. Juju switch. Usenix. Juju quick start. And I'm doing this because I'm lazy and I don't want to find the IP and punch it into my browser for me. So I'm going to have quick start do it for me. Another thing is to get started, we had some people ask about our APIs. We're not using a typical REST-based model. It is a hypermedia API using WebSockets and a JSON interchange. So we recommend that people use the CLI to interface with it, interact with it, if you're not going to use the GUI. My internet is pokey. As far as the review process, in building a community, I find that it is important to undergo peer review and have the ability to talk to the people about what's going on with their deployments and why we would either acknowledge it or disavow it. We have this this tool called the Charmer Review Queue, and I myself, as a charmer, it's my responsibility to go through here and take a look at the different units that are being submitted. Here's a new charm that was written by a community member called GoPrano. And it's a CDN service backed by Swift. And it looks like one of my coworkers has already enacted it for what value does this have over changing the Swift bucket to public read ACL, as far as I can tell, none. Not the most constructive criticism, but the idea behind this is that as a user, I would fetch this. Or as a charmer, I would fetch this repository and I would go through the code, and make sure that no services are being run as root, make sure that it's following item potency guidelines, that I can run this script more than once and it won't just completely blow stuff up, that it does what it says it does. If it says it's going to, you know, spin up this the Swift replacement, that it actually does that and validate that the ACLs are the same and that we have good documentation, that the charm itself is well formed, and. Like, as a new user, the first thing I'm going to ask is, well, how do I deploy this? If I just drag and drop this on my canvas, is it going to work out of the box? So README is honestly the poorest way to communicate change. It's awesome, and the fact that you have documentation, it's poor the fact that nobody uses it, nobody reads it. They just say, oh, this should work out of the box. So it's important for us to make sure that the same defaults are there. So if you've got a dependency on another relationship, it's feasible to expect that to be in the README, but we do tout that strong defaults, that any user can just visit it in the store, drop it on their GUI, they're good to go. All right, Chris, I think I ran a little short, man. I'm out of content. Got excited, started talking real fast, and kept moving. So if there's no further questions, I want to thank everybody for their time.